Morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm okay. Hey, and you?
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah, been a busy week and last week, but it was all good.
Yeah, I was going to say, busy is probably the thing with fraud. Just as a thing to get us underway, really. We used to read lots and lots about villains raiding banks, and there were lots of bank robberies. You don't hear of bank robberies these days, but what you do hear lots of are people getting their bank accounts raided, which really just signifies, I suppose, a modern day bank raid, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, crime has changed so much in my lifetime, the past 20 years, whatever it may be. The internet has given us so many benefits as a society, but it's also opened up the scope for fraud. So it's so much easier now for criminals to target victims all around the world from the comfort of their living room. So we need to be aware. You know, it's exciting times that we live in. You know, there's lots of new technologies out there, but our communities just need to be vigilant.
Because our bank accounts are essentially private things, and it's something that's increasing at a very fast rate. What guarantees do we have from banks that our money is actually safe?
Well, banks have a duty of care for your money, and it's their responsibility to do everything they can within reason to safeguard the finances in your account. So, your bank, if you report fraud to your bank, they should have measures in place to safeguard you. Banks are actually getting pretty good at this. So if you're doing online banking and you're making payments, sometimes they'll get you to do a biometric prompt to verify that you are the person trying to make the purchase. So banks are getting pretty good. But where banks aren't being cooperative with victims of fraud, you know, there's measures that you can take. You know, you can make formal complaints to them, you can contact the ombudsman. But generally, in my experience, banks have been getting better at this, and they've been providing a lot of services to victims. I mean, a lot of banks now have dedicated fraud teams that will give kind of proactive advice, kind of like what the police do.
I was going to say, I know sort of not so long ago, I actually tried to transfer some money from my account to my wife's, and the bank was on it like goodness knows what, and wanted me to jump through hoops just to transfer money from my account to my wife's account. In some ways, I can't blame them for it. And I have to thank them for actually being so vigilant. But it can be rather frustrating, some of this stuff, can't it?
It can be, and what I always prefer is that you just make it a bit more seamless. So rather than using a code verification process where you get text to some boring code that's finicky to put into the thing, I always prefer just the thumbprint, you know, use your biometrics. So with NatWest or whatever kind of account you're using, if you're trying to make a payment, just input your thumbprint and good as gold, you know, and you've got a safe, secure way of making a payment without having to fear about your card details being stolen.
This is a relatively new thing to the masses, isn't it? Because I've seen this thing with thumbprint. I mean, I'm still on the old-fashioned, if I'm doing something and the bank want verification, they tell me to check my phone, it sends me a code, and I can go back into my account and tap in this code, and all of a sudden, ping, it all works, which is brilliant, which is how it's supposed to. And for some of it, it's rather comforting that it does work that way. But the fingerprint thing, which is probably, as you've said, very much safer, because your thumbprint or your fingerprint is very, very unique to you. Mm-hmm. But how advanced is the technology? Because so many people think, fingerprint? How do I put my fingerprint on something?
Most people have smart devices now. The general public, you know, the statistics are, I think, like 90% of people, have smartphones. Even, you know, people.
We have them, but do we know how to use them?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the things, obviously. So banks can't be too reliant on biometrics as a way of getting people to verify themselves, because they always need an alternative, you know, because not everyone uses these kind of measures, and the banks always need to provide something for those people.
Yeah, because, I mean, biometrics, I mean, is something that's coming in not just when it comes to banks and fraud and that. It's also to do with travelling now, isn't it? With biometrics and showing your eye, looking at something, you know, they've got a picture of your eyes, which will sort of verify that it's you as well. Those sorts of things.
I don't actually like those, though. They're called retina scans.
Yeah.
And I think it's a risk, because you're actually providing potentially sensitive medical data. So if you're going into a restricted area and it's asking you to take a picture of your retina or whatever, you know, there's a lot of medical inferences you can get from someone's eye. And, you know, I don't think that's the kind of data that, you know, a company should be holding. So generally, retina scans are quite rare now. People tend to prefer, like, your biometrics.
Yeah.
I mean, Face ID is a very popular thing on iPhones. And fun fact, if you've got an evil twin, they'll be able to get into your account because you have the same facial geometry. But yeah, there's lots of ways you can log into an account securely. And with regard to online payments, you don't always need to have it directly linked to your bank account. You can get what's called a virtual card now. So, you know, services like PayPal or Revolut, places like that, they offer what's called like a one-time card. Mm. So it's a card which is temporarily funded. The purchase is made on the website, but then that card is deleted. So essentially it means there's no lingering payment information.
Isn't that the way Gmail works?
In what regard?
Well, because, I mean, again, as a personal experience of shopping, I use my phone, actually, and it uses Gmail. And when you look at it, the card that they've used is not the card, and it actually tells you it's not your card that they've used. Mm. Is that a similar thing?
But I'm not entirely sure with Gmail. I mean,
The reason I ask is, again, because to me, just the ordinary Joe in the street, that would seem ultimately a lot safer than using your card in a shop where your details do go across, electricity and all the rest, or the electrics of making this thing work. Whereas if you're using Gmail, it's a number that is allocated back to Google, and they're the only ones that know your card details.
Yeah, and sometimes the payment machines that you get out and about in the shopping mall, they can be a cybersecurity risk. Because if there's malware infected on these kind of devices, criminals can card clone and they can card swipe some of the victims that are making payments on these devices. So that's why, you know, businesses have a responsibility to make sure that their payment processing units are secure, they're up to date, and that they're not tampered with malware. Because, you know, you can imagine like the scale of damage that could happen from a cybersecurity incident like that. I mean, I think Target in the USA, they had a massive cybersecurity incident where a criminal basically infected all of their cash registers with malware. So whenever someone swiped their card, like, the criminal would take the details. So it's absolutely terrifying.
It is terrifying. And all of this is before we've even got to the government campaign that we're here to talk about this morning. Stop Think Fraud. We've been talking about various different forms of what is essentially fraud by just in ordinary everyday life. The hazards are all around us, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Stop Think Fraud campaign is quite new. It launched a couple of weeks ago. So it's funded by the Home Office, which we always like to see some extra money thrown into fighting fraud. But generally, it's a big advertising campaign in general. So you're going to see posters and train stations, buses, advertisements, promotions on social media about how to safeguard yourself against fraud. But always, you know, we're welcome to see this kind of stuff, aren't we? So, you know, it helps safeguard the most vulnerable in our communities. But there's lots of really good material there. So they've got a website. So just type in Stop Think Fraud and it will lead you to the website. It's the .gov one. They've got loads of advice there and what to do if you're the victim of fraud, where to seek help, how you can essentially get your money back, what to do if you're there.
I'm going to say there's some stunning statistics on here as well. I mean, I've fortunately never been the subject of fraud. I've had many, many sort of junk emails from people telling me I've got parcels to pick up and all those sorts of things. But that's another sort of thing. I'm absolutely rich because I've got some uncle in Nigeria as well who's holding millions of pounds for me. But all of that is a separate thing. But there's a staggering fact on the front page of the Gov website that says, did you know in just 1 year, 1 in 17 adults were the victims of fraud? This is a very prevalent thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's loads of mind-blowing statistics. Like, almost half of all reported crime is fraud-related. Which is just, you know, it's terrifying, isn't it? Just the sheer scale and the abundance of these kind of crime types. But the really good news, Tony, is that there's so many kind of simple steps that you can do that will massively reduce your chance of being a victim. So when we talk about online fraud, just those basic things like having a strong password and two-factor authentication is so important. You know, so I know it's easy to do and we're all guilty of this in the past, but don't have your dog's name as a password, you know? Because if you have one word as a password, a cyber criminal, it will take them just 2 minutes to crack that. because they've got, you know, these special machines that can input random passwords into the input box. Eventually they're going to crack it. So having three random words as a password supported by special characters, it massively amplifies the complexity of your passwords. And same with two-step verification as well. Even if a criminal has your password, but you have two-step verification on, they're still not getting into your account. So again, I recommend biometrics for that. You know, have some kind of prompt where you can input your thumbprint whenever you're, you know, logging into an account. And this is another way of verifying that it's not a criminal getting into your account.
It's terrifying, really, that we have to go to these measures these days. What are the deterrents to people to actually getting involved in this kind of activity? Because once upon a time, as I said at the beginning of all of this, we used to read bits about this bank being robbed or that bank being robbed, and a gang of bank robbers being sort of jailed, found guilty and jailed, and sort of basically out of circulation. This is on a whole different scale, and it's a whole different degree of anonymity, isn't it, that is actually perpetrating these things?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complicated question. Like, we do have a dedicated pursue team, and we will pursue offenders where there's reasonable lines of inquiry. I'm really proud of the detectives that we have in our unit. They're incredible people, and they do, you know, so much with what little they have sometimes. But, you know, generally, you know, we will pursue lines of inquiry, especially domestically. But the problem that you alluded to earlier is that a lot of the threat actors are based abroad. So when you've got people that have, you know, sophisticated fraud warehouses in, you know, India or Pakistan, wherever it may be, sometimes the best way that we can safeguard our communities is by making them resilient to the crime type in the first place. So that means like talking to community groups about you know, having strong passwords and never giving their payment information over the phone. We launched our monthly webinar project recently as well. So every single month I'm delivering webinars on cybersecurity. I've also got one on AI as well, which I'm doing every month.
That's really a scary subject.
It is, yeah. So there's all kinds of exciting things that we're doing. And I mean, with cyber criminality as well, like I mentioned, like obviously most of the threat actors are based abroad. Where they're based domestically, sometimes it can actually skew quite young. They can be teenagers who are they're proficient on video games and computers, but they start meddling around with hacking their school's network, whatever it may be. So we have quite a dedicated prevent inputs with these teenagers, all from the police. So it's kind of a gentle approach where we all speak to them and try and divert them from a path of criminality into one of a more of a lucrative career option. Because obviously, yeah, cybersecurity is a very well-paid profession. Not for me, because I'm in the public sector. but it's it's quite tragic when you see these teenagers who could have a really fulfilling career in cybersecurity and they go down this bad route. So there's a big input of the prevent team there to kind of steer these people away from that.
Yeah, you mentioned there fraud warehouses. Just describe what a fraud warehouse actually is.
Yeah,
I think puts some sort of some sort of measure of just how big this situation is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, these organizations have a huge amount of infrastructure. So they'll have secretaries, they'll have managers, presidents, whatever it may be. By the way, like, because they operate like a business, one of the best things to do to waste their time is to literally just keep them on the phone for a little while, because they're given quotas. And if they don't defraud like 10 people a week or whatever, then they're probably going to get fired. So, you know, if you can keep them on the phone, if you've got nothing else to do, then it's always a good way of keeping them away from more vulnerable people in our society.
Yeah.
But generally, like, we call them organized crime gangs because, as I said, they're just set up to defraud, you know, people all the time. So hundreds of people in office sometimes, all making phone calls every day, or they're creating emails to send to people. It's a tough one, but... You know, often they're going to ask you for your payment details. They're going to try and emulate a trusted source. There's ways of identifying them as scam.
I'm sort of just stunned at the actual sheer size of this and that they're allowed to get away with it. Because the one thing that's becoming apparent in all of this conversation is that the emphasis is much more on protecting ourselves rather than pursuing and... actually catching the criminals who, for the most part, are not even in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it's really logistically difficult. So if, let's say, there's an organized crime gang that hacks someone's Facebook account and they're based all the way in India, and the victim's not lost any money, but they've lost access to the Facebook account, we have to question ourselves, like, is that, with limited resources, how do we use them effectively? And, when we pursue investigation and it's, you know, fraud warehouse in India, whatever it may be, the chances that we're actually going to get a meaningful outcome of that are very, very slim. Because obviously we don't have an extradition treaty on fraud with these countries. So, you know, getting them to the UK to face justice will be, you know, near impossible. But what we can do is we can disrupt them. So every now and then there's big international operations to disrupt a lot of these fraud warehouses. And you know, some of them are based in the UK as well. So, you know, our team personally have taken down quite a few of them. You know, this is staggering. They've got fake passports and everything. The amount of like evidence that you can get from these places physically is staggering. But the problem that you have is that obviously if you take one down, another one pops up like a mushroom. So the best way of fighting it really is to make sure that our communities are resilient, so these people can't make money from us in the first place.
Okay, so it's Stop Think Fraud. Now, as I said earlier, I fortunately I've never been subject to any of this. I mean, yeah, I've had sort of people try either by phone or by email, and you know, as I can generally work out what's what, but I mean, there are lots of people who can't. So this website actually will help you, and it'll actually tell you if you're at risk. There's a piece on there that says, "Are you at risk? How to spot the fraud?" That's the other. That's the other major one. The help on this site is, it's very good. And then to protect yourself from fraud, because there's any amount of protection available, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And typically, the giveaway signs will be a call for urgency. Or they'll try and make you panic. It'll be scarcity. They'll say, you know, we've got cheap movie tickets or cheap concert tickets, you know, limited time. They'll try and make you panic. That's how these people get into people's accounts. But the most insidious type that I actually find is somewhat multi-layered. So you're familiar with romance fraud, right? So it's people kind of, they emulate a romantic relationship and try and get close to the victim. Sometimes criminals will springboard from romance fraud onto an investment scam. So they'll, you know, they'll warm someone up. They'll try and get them to invest in a cryptocurrency, whatever it may be. And they'll have like a dedicated, trading platform, kind of like Trading 212 or Hargreaves Lansdown. They'll emulate a site that looks like that, but obviously is not them. And they'll get the victim to put in £100. On paper, the site will say the victim's made £500. So the victim's all excited. They're thinking, oh, I'm making all this money. My boyfriend's got me involved in these amazing investments. In reality, they've lost everything. But then the criminal get the victim to escalate it, and they'll double down. They say, oh, you put in £1,000, you'll make even more money. And they will scale that up as high as they can before they pull the rug. And I've seen people lose hundreds of thousands due to that kind of scam from romance fraud. So be very, very mindful if your boyfriend or your partner, whoever it may be, is trying to get you to invest in something, and especially if you've not met that person.
Yeah, so I'm guessing then the only thing you can do is be vigilant, read up as much as you can about it, and be very, very cautious when talking to anybody on the phone who you don't know,
yes.
I would presume, and say, talk to people like you.
Yeah, absolutely. And just never, ever give your payment information out over the phone. You can enable something called Smart Caller ID. So on Android devices, if you go on the phone app and hit the three dotted lines at the top right, you can enable this. So it's great because it'll give you early preview of who's calling you. I love it, Tony, because if I get some message prompt that says this may be a suspicious call, I will pick up the phone and say, hi, Daniel Sykes, cybercrime unit, at which point they will slam the phone down really quickly. So it's good advice.
Could we all be part of your gang?
Absolutely.
I like that idea. It is it's a campaign, stopthinkfraud.campaign.gov.uk, that is the website. And campaign, has it actually got underway yet?
It has, yeah. So there's like social media posts that have gone out from the Home Office. They're putting a lot of money behind it finally. So there's stuff on train stations, buses now. You'll start to see it more and more as it gets further syndicated.
Yeah, and if we think we're actually being or somebody's trying to defraud us of something, how do we go about reporting it?
So always report to Action Fraud. Action Fraud is the UK's fraud reporting site. So they've got bespoke victim support services there. So even if you're reporting fraud and you've got no line of inquiry or whatever it may be, victims will still receive some kind of communication or support from that victim care service. If you're reporting cybercrime especially, I will call you up. So regardless of what's happened to you, I'll tell you how you can safeguard your accounts, how you can potentially recover them, and how to mitigate risks in the future as well.
That's rather reassuring that there are people out there that can actually help us. But I think the main piece of advice I would guess to anybody who's not sure is, if in doubt, don't.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, never trust and always verify.
There we go. Daniel, it's been good to catch up today. Good luck with this campaign, and I'm sure there's much, much more that we can look at further down the line. But for now, Daniel Sykes, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you very much, Tony.